You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is Ashley Winch in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And I'm Kat Gunther from White Lake, Michigan, and you're listening to the Quarter Horse Podcast for Tuesday, March 17th. Good morning, Horse World.
Kat, it's everybody's favorite day, Quarter Horse Tuesday.
Always.
Well, at least our favorite.
I know. We always have so much fun.
I know. And today's episode, we say it every time, like, we're going to have a great show. But this episode, I'm so excited about because we are circling back with our besties.
I know. We're going to be chatting with Amanda Delgado, Katie Van Slyke, and Madeline Hauser today.
I mean, it's a star-studded show. We got dressage. We got Western dressage. We got breeding. We got VS Code Red. I mean, this is like the Quarter Horse Spectacular of the year.
The Super Bowl.
Oh, except I hate football.
I know. I call it sports ball because I don't know anything that's happening in football. Like, I don't know sports, period.
Me neither.
So I call it
my husband always makes fun of me and he's like, yay, sports, go team, do the thing. That's it.
Yeah.
I just want to go to the tailgate.
Like, yes. But the shirts that say, I hope they're having fun or something. Like, I just hope both teams have fun. That's me.
I love it. That's why we're in horses. Okay.
Exactly. We watched the Budweiser commercial at the Super Bowl. That's what I look forward to. I feel like that's what most horse people look forward to.
I think it's more like the Budweiser commercial is supported by the football game. You know what I mean?
That is
versus the football game supported by the Budweiser.
Yes, I could not agree more.
Well, you know what? Let's just dive right into it because we have three great guests and three wonderful conversations to have. So let's just go have some fun.
Let's go. So, Amanda, can you give our listeners who may not have heard you on the Western Dressage episode a little background on you and your horse?
Yeah. So my mare, Athena, she was a rescue mare and she's a quarter horse. Mm-hmm. So that is the cool thing. I just don't have papers on her. So I DNA'd her through UC Davis. She is a quarter horse. But I found her in a pasture with horse skeletons in 2015. And We dabbled in a lot of the all-around events in the stock horse world, you know, the Hunter Hunter Saddle, the ranch. But she never really was quite appreciated for who she was there, and she didn't really enjoy it. And we found Western Dressage through the Pinot Association back in 2018. We came back in 2019, and she won her first world titles in Western Dressage at the Pinot World Show. Mm-hmm. Now she's a multiple world champion. We've got well over 10 world championship titles in Western Dressage now. We go to the Western Dressage World Show every year. And in 2024, she was the Celebration Briar Horse for the theme Against All Odds, which was pretty incredible. And then just this past January, she was voted the first stock horse USEF Horse of the Year, which was huge. She was the first Western, first stock horse to be voted for USEF Horse of the Year. So that was a huge moment for us.
That's amazing. So what did that process look like? Like, how did you find out that happened?
Yeah, so it has been such a whirlwind. So back in November, I got contacted by USEF and they said, hey, we just want to let you know that your association has nominated your horse for USEF Horse of the Year and the awards committee has picked it up. So kind of how the process works is that each breed and discipline in USEF nominates one horse. Mm-hmm. Well, then that process goes to the USEF like nomination awards committee. I'm not quite sure the exact title of it, but basically they pick up three or four international horses and then three or four national horses. Athena got picked up as a national horse, which was amazing because that was the first time Western Dressage has ever had a nominated horse there. And so they reached out to me and they said, hey, just to let you know, it's a secret. You can't tell anyone yet.
That must have been so hard to keep as a secret. I would be internally freaking out.
Oh my gosh, I was bawling like a baby. But they said, hey, you know, it's a secret, but here in December, you know, just keep an eye out for emails and social media, but basically it'll go to a popular vote. Okay. And so, which was awesome, but you know, WDAA is a fairly new organization compared to the other USEF organizations. Like one of the other, like the Hunter Jumper horse that got picked up for the National Horse of the Year, the Hunter Jumper Association has over 27,000 USEF members. Wow. The Morgan Horse Association has over 4,000 USEF members. WDAA only had 400 USEF members. And so we knew it was going to be like this huge mountain to climb. I mean, WDAA has more members, just, you know, USEF members. Mm-hmm. But they basically said, hey, in December, we're going to start voting. And I reached back out to WDA and we decided to do this huge campaign to start marketing her. And we were just going to blast it and be obnoxious for however long the voting period was. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what day they were going to announce it. I didn't know anything. So the day they dropped it, I was like, oh my gosh, it's here. It's happening.
Yeah, that is so cool. Congratulations. That must be such an awesome feeling. And it's so representative of rescue horses. Like, what do you think that does for the whole rescue horse world?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing because we finally, you know, someone brought it to my attention there. They said, you know, the horses that win this are like usually like $500,000 horses or up. And now we have a rescue horse who's won this. And so I think it shows the world that rescue horses could do anything that, you know, a papered horse can do. And it doesn't define who they are forever. It just defines a point, like a tough time in their life. And so I think it's done a lot for rescue horses. I think it's done a lot for stock horses. I think it's done a lot for Western dressage. It's she just kind of broke a lot of ceilings all in this one.
Yeah.
That one award.
Oh yeah. And what has the community response been? Cause I know she has a huge following behind her. Like she has her own fan clubs basically.
Yeah. It was such an amazing moment. I had been to the USEF awards banquet before because we usually win a couple of the USEF end of the year high point kind of stuff for Western dressage. It's called the USEF Horse of the Year. And I've been there, and normally by that time it's the end of the night. So just a heads up, people think that I had known before. I did not. They did not tell me until the moment they announced it, which was brutal. I couldn't eat dinner. I was just so sick with like I was so anxious. But years passed. You know, it's the end of the evening. People are talking kind of over everything. And, you know, it's, you know, and then they kind of people clap and then they go on their way. Well, when they went to announce the National Horse of the Year, the room went like dead silent. Like you could hear a pin drop.
Oh.
And then when they announced her name, the whole room just erupted, which I had never seen a response like that in years past. Mm-hmm. And then after I had given my speech, like the whole room, like we had a standing ovation, and it was just this moment where I was like, wow, for so long, it felt like we weren't accepted as a rescue horse. And, you know, she wasn't accepted in so many different situations. And then now we're in a room with like Olympians and they're giving her a standing ovation. It was just this amazing moment. And I was so grateful for the community to be so gracious and kind and accepting to her and just so supportive. It was I'm still like fighting words for it.
I love this so much. This is amazing. So what is it like to have a horse who's the horse of the year and you have like her own Briar horse? That's amazing. Yeah.
it's been the most surreal journey I've ever. Like this is it. Like this, the joke so far has been, it doesn't get better than this. And I remember like taking her to her first open show and her winning her classes. So I was like, it doesn't get better than this. And then, you know, taking her to the Pinot World Show and she won her first world title. I'm like, okay, it doesn't get better than this. Mm-hmm. And then she became a Briar horse. I'm like, all right, for real, it doesn't get better than this. And
that's
then now
every kid's dream right there is their horse to be a Briar horse.
Literally. I was that Briar kid. And so when she won USEF Horse of the Year, I was like, okay, for real now, it doesn't get better than this. And I'm just so honored and grateful for the equestrian community and everyone who rallied behind her to vote, because we couldn't have won this award without all the votes and support.
Yeah.
And so You know, this, it just means so much to me. She's my best friend, and she's my once in a lifetime horse. You know, it's a horse that, you know, she's mine, and I've trained her throughout the whole thing. And so to have her win this monumental award, it's been just, oh my gosh, it means the world to us.
Aww, well, congratulations again. It's kind of hard to top this. Has anything else happened since we last spoke that?
there's a lot going on behind the scenes right now. We have a lot of publications reaching out, wanting to do interviews, and some exciting things potentially in the works that I can't really quite talk about yet.
Yeah.
But it has just been such a whirlwind journey. You know, I rescued her. I just wanted to give her a good home. And then now all of this has happened. And I know it sounds ridiculous. I don't have words. Like, it's been such a surreal journey.
Oh, no, I love this. This is amazing.
Thanks.
So, do you have any goals in the show pen or any big goals for 2026?
Yeah. So the beautiful thing about Western dressage is that there's always a level to, like, there's always another level to go up, and then there's always like a progression of the training, and then there's always something else to do. So she's moving up to the level 3 division, and we're hoping to earn her gold medal, which is awesome. And then eventually down the road, we like to earn her supreme title and then her super horse title in Western dressage. We would love to pull eggs from her and breed her. I've debated back and forth, like, would I would let her carry or not? But if something happened to this horse, I'd be so wrecked. And so I'm probably going to let a surrogate carry for her. So I'd love to breed her. We're planning to go back out to Briarfest this July. They invited us back out, so we'll be there. There's still so much. It was such a funny thing. Like, at the awards banquet, this guy came up to me and he was like, "So you're going to retire her now, right?" And I just kind of looked at him and I was like, "Well, no." And he's like, "Well, you got to let her go out on top. Let her go out undefeated." And I was like, "That's not what Western dressage is about. It's about this journey and about this progression. And there's always something else to work towards." And I personally love and appreciate that. Like, you don't plateau. There's always something else.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck. I'm sure you guys are going to keep shattering the ceilings, and there's always something next.
it was such a cool thing. When Athena got nominated, people kept coming up to me. They're like, "You know, she's the first stock horse to ever get a USEF nomination."
Yeah.
And it was just this cool moment, because I was like, wow, for Western sport to be like recognized on this stage, that's such a huge moment.
That's huge. And
yeah, because I think, you know, I think it goes both ways, but, you know, I think in the English world, you know, which is predominantly like USEF, you know, I think they respect Western sport, but they've never really like legitimized it. Like, it hasn't really been like a legit thing. And this time, like, we have a Western horse who is the USEF horse of the year. I mean, that's such a huge moment.
Yeah, that's monumental, honestly.
Yeah.
For my last question, I'm going to ask you, can you tell us a funny story about Athena? Your favorite in the show pen, outside, just a moment you're like, "That's my quirky horse."
So it was actually really, this one is like fairly recent. So Athena's a little bit of a diva. Well, not a little bit. She's a diva. And I love her for it. She's earned it. She can do and have whatever she wants. She's a quirky mare, and that's fine. She's earned it. But we actually went to this charity event for Brooke USA. Athena and I are Brooke USA ambassadors. It's this amazing organization. It's a nonprofit that helps promote equine welfare in third world countries. But they also help equine welfare here in the United States, too. But they don't just kind of like throw money at that problem. They help educate people on how to take better care of their equines, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
So we are at this charity event where we were going to perform a freestyle to a live orchestra.
Oh.
And they had asked us, like, "Hey, would you mind doing like a meet and greet with Athena before the event so people could come up and talk to her and meet her?" And we're like, "Yeah, of course." So I was sitting down and I was drinking sweet tea. You know, we're Southern, so, you know, I love sweet tea. And Athena just reaches over and grabs my cup and just starts drinking from the sweet tea. And is just like sit there sucking it down. And then, you know, she pulls her lip up and it's a whole thing. But everyone was just dying laughing. And then pretty much anything that I was kind of snacking and snipping on, she's like, what's yours is mine. And just kept like snacking from like my donuts or my sweet tea. And it was just, it was so cute. It was like she was just having her own little private tea party there.
She sounds like a diva. I love it. I love me a diva mare.
Yeah, that's her. She earned it, though. It's been I found it in a pasture with, like, horse skeletons, I found her in this pasture with horse skeletons, and it was grazed down to dirt. She had, like, it wasn't even, like, a real, like shed for her to get into because it didn't have a roof. It just had three walls. So to go to that, to where she is now, I mean, she's living in a palace. I'm trying low key to get a chandelier put in her stall.
Please do that. That's amazing. All the sweet tea in the world for Athena and a chandelier.
Yeah. She's such a diva and such a princess, but you know, she's earned every bit of it.
So. I think we can all agree on that. Oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Amanda. It's been great chatting with you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
We're heading to Running Springs Farm to check in with Katie Van Slyke, who is in the heart of foaling season.
So, Katie, we're in foaling season now. It's exciting. It's happening. I want to know, what is the first thing you look for when a new foal hits the ground to know, like, they might have that versatility gene that you're looking for?
The versatility gene. So, yeah. I mean, when they come out, ain't none of them pretty that first little bit, right? They're just like pulled up and their shoulders are all crunched in. And so you got to let them unfold a little bit. But then I think, you know, level-headedness and, you know, I think the majority of my babies, that is what our goal is. And so, you know, I think I look for a free-flowing stride and I look for balanced. And, I think you can kind of see that potential pretty quickly. And then it just kind of changes as they grow because they do go through the uglies at some point. But, you know, in that first like 3 months, you can see the magic. And then after that, it's a weird time period until they turn two. So
it's like me in seventh grade.
So we have four on the ground right now, three of them being code reds, one of them being a hey, good looking filly. And we unfortunately lost our fifth one. It was stillborn. And that was just the realities of, you know, any livestock breeding and foaling out. And unfortunately, that's just going to happen. So it had a knot in its umbilical cord, which isn't something anybody can predict or, you know, prevent. And then we have four left. So we have kind of like two foaling seasons this year. We had like our four early ones. We had a middle one, which was funny because our fourth and our fifth one swapped places. One of them was like a month early and the other one was, you know, 3 weeks late. And so that kind of messed with our timeline a bit. And then we have four that are due in the first 2 weeks of April. And so they're all kind of crammed together at the beginning. You can kind of tell my breeding season last year, we had some Hail Marys and then they all took. And so we had a very, end of foaling season boom. So we have four left.
Now I'm going to ask you a very hard hitting question. Do you have a favorite so far?
Ooh, that's a deep one.
Oh, no. I think there's one that definitely, like, he's just super sweet and loves on me and stuff. So he definitely is tugging on my heartstrings right now. But I have just so much hope and I can admire different things about each one of them so far. So I think personality wise, I have a favorite. I can't say that I have a favorite as far as like, you know, which one I'm going to show in the future or anything like that yet. But my VS Code Red colt that's out of my thoroughbred mare, he is the sweetest thing I think I've ever had. And he just like loves on me and kisses me and like wants to lay in my lap, even though he's gargantuan. So
he knows what he's doing. He's working that angle.
Yeah. And his name's Woody. I don't know what I'm going to name him, his registered name yet.
But I was going to ask, that's got to be the hardest part. I mean, I know it's not really the hardest part, but in breeding is thinking of all the names. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that would be really hard.
I tend to like, you know, some of the babies that I have in the past few years, I go with the obvious choice of like mashing their parents' names together. But I do try sometimes to think outside of the box and just go with their barn name and just create something completely different that sounds cute in the show pen, you know, where it doesn't really allude to who their parents are, but it just is them, you know. So sometimes I find that to be more fun. And then other times I think it is important to try to, you know, do an ode to their parents. So like, for instance, one of my mares, her name is Cat Kills Are Blazing. I always put Cat in her fillies.
Because I like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like doing that.
I really like that.
It's with a K.
Oh, okay, okay. Still love it.
Yeah.
But speaking of, how is VS Code Red doing? Do we have an update on him?
He's 19 and doing amazing. So he is, you know, just super, like the longevity, I think, speaks volumes to those genetics and that breeding. So it's like, you know, he showed past what a lot of stallions show in the Western riding. And, you know, I even talked with Charlie Cole not too long ago about what a fantastic trail horse he was. He never showed in it, but like he was just so talented in it. And I think that's showing through his progeny. Trail is definitely one of their best things, you know? So I love seeing all the early shows right now. And I've seen his babies like at the Sun Circuit and all these early shows, winning in the trail, the Hunter Under Saddle, the Showmanship, the Eck. Like, he's just got these, you know, super versatile babies, which I think is, again, so important. And that's something I shoot for. So he's doing great. He's healthy. He's happy. Just doing his job. This is his favorite time of year.
I bet it is. You know, that gives me a great segue. I had an email in my inbox a couple weeks ago, and your boy was the headline. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this exciting announcement?
So the VS Code Red English Versatility Challenge at the World Show and then the English Versatility Series throughout this year is very exciting. I'm so honored to have been able to kind of be at the front, not necessarily the front end of this, because there were so many people before me, like Lainey DeBoer and Sarah Chabot and like all these people that I was talking with about it beforehand, and they've done all the legwork, and they're not even the only ones. I can't even think of all the people to name that have been doing the legwork and the hard part of this. But it was so important to me with having stallions that I view as such an integral part of those versatile babies hitting the ground. And the versatility of the quarter horse is just so important to me, and spreading the word about how there's kind of just something for everybody within the industry. And the one thing that I felt like there wasn't really something for people was that middle ground between the Hunter Under Saddle and the Hunter classes, the overfence classes, and there's not really a class to create an Eck horse. There's not really a class that fits the needs of those that don't necessarily want to just do a rail class, but aren't really either ready to go over fences or might not have the physical ability to go over fences for humans and horses, you know? So it gives trainers an ability to school Eck horses, create Eck horses, for riders like me who don't necessarily have the physical ability or the want to jump, to go in and have this really cool pattern to take their fancy hunter horse in that, you know, may have not really fit in with the futurity bubble of Hunter Under Saddle horses, but is still fancy and usable. And then it gives them the tools to maybe even go on further than that past me if I'm going to sell them to a hunter, you know? And so that's kind of the series, because there's just a non-pro and a pro version at the moment. And then at the World Show, it's going to be very Western pleasure versatility-esque. So it's going to be where there's a halter portion, a pattern, and then a Hunter Under Saddle portion. And it's judged, you know, three separate judges, and none of them can know what's going on. So it's very, you know, non-biased. And it's just going to try to reward the most correct form to function hunter prospect that we can. So at the World Show, it's different. They can't be also showing in a hunter over fences class at the World Show. At the regular shows, just in the series, it can be anybody. But it's definitely for those freer moving, you know, big stepped. You want them to look like they're going over a fence, you know, like that is the next step for them. And so they've got to be able to cover distances. They've got to be able to, you know, hit those lines, because there's going to be Cavalettis, and it's just going to be a really, really fun thing to watch. And it's 4 and up at the World Show. So hopefully, I do have a 4-year-old this year that is it's an appendix filly that I really, really hope is ready by then. So we'll have to see.
Like, I can't wait. I really want to watch this.
I would have died to have this class when I had all around gelding, because he just didn't really fit in that bubble of like, he himself had some issues where he couldn't jump, but then he was kind of like past his hunter under saddle prime, but he was a pattern machine and he was gorgeous. And I honestly just don't have the want to jump necessarily. And I'm a little bit of a scaredy cat. And so that would have just been like the perfect thing for me and that horse. And so I'm looking forward to that in the future.
Oh, me too. Cross rails scare me. Even cross rails, I cannot do them.
And so it's a good space. It's a good space for scaredy cats like us. And then it's a space for those who want to have the building blocks to then move on to fences. So
where do you see this heading in, let's say, the next 5 years? What are your goals for this program?
I hope that it turns into something that people create horses for and utilize to the fullest. I hope it turns into something that brings more people into AQHA. I hope it's something where, you know, there might have been a little gap where there wasn't something for these people, and now there is. And so I'm hoping it brings more people. I'm hoping it gives some of these horses that might not make it for that futurity level and the hunter to saddle and the 2 to 4 year old stuff, I hope it gives them this job that gives them, you know, more tools under their belt and more value. And I just think it's going to be great all around.
That's super exciting. And, you know, I think what's so beautiful is the fact that this is a real tangible legacy that we will have, that you will have, you know. It's really beautiful to see. And I hope you're very proud of yourself and your stallion, because we're all very impressed.
I want to say, yes, I feel so blessed to be a part of this, but like truly, like I have not done the hard part. There have been so many people doing the legwork and the hard part. The person or the people that have been in contact with me mostly is absolutely Lainey DeBoer, Sarah Elder Chabot as well. And so Lainey and I met up in Ocala last year at the Sudden Impulse Futurity, and they had the class there. And I interviewed her, and actually we did a YouTube video on it, and that we have that up just kind of explaining what the class was. And that just kind of started the ball rolling. And so it's been great.
I love it. And we'll definitely drop a link to that video in our show notes for those who want to learn more about that. So, let's see. I mean, what else does your spring hold before we go? What else other than I know we're waiting for more foals.
Right. We're waiting on more foals, and that's making it kind of difficult because I do have a horse, and I'm not going to say who it is quite yet. I do have a horse I'm showing this year that's not Denver. So I'm showing Denver, which is first things first. I'll show him in the halter and the pleasure, hopefully. But I do have a horse that I'm showing in the Western riding and possibly the trail, just to kind of get my feet wet and back into things after being on such a long break. And so I've got to find time to go ride him, and I literally can't leave the property because everyone keeps having their babies when they're not supposed to, or holding on to them forever. And so, yeah, that's a definitely a really exciting piece of the spring where I'm excited to get back into the show pen. I have a couple horses at home that I plan to take to some local shows. And we have a new trainer on site named Stephanie Bean. And so that's kind of opening up so many more doors for me as well. Not just getting back in the saddle, but, you know, taking my babies to shows, showing people that through social media, that next step, documenting all of those things that we've never documented before. So it's just lots of exciting things.
And I have to ask here, I don't know if you remember our last question last time, the funniest memory you have with your favorite quarter horse. Do you have any new funny memories?
Oh, Lord. Off the top of my head, you know, my brain is a little fried from just like breeding season and foaling season. So I can't think of anything off the top of my head at the moment. I haven't been in the show pen in so long that I look forward to making some new embarrassing memories. So
there you go.
Maybe this new gelding or Denver will embarrass me soon enough, and then we'll have another embarrassing story.
Well, with love, we can't wait for that.
Me too. I will definitely be sharing it. So,
well, thank you so much for coming back on the show, Katie. It's always a pleasure. And just for those who might not know, where can folks find you?
You can find me pretty much any social media platform. So Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, YouTube. I think we're about to hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube today.
Congratulations.
So, we've been watching the counter all morning. So yeah, we're on all those, and we post like maniacs on all of those. So
fantastic. Well, keep up the great work, and we will be in touch, Katie.
Thank you so much.
Our next guest is Madeline Hauser of the Blonde in the Bay fame. You may remember her from our dressage episode. Let's welcome Madeline.
Joining us now is Madeline Hauser, who was last on the show on our dressage episode. And a lot has changed with you, Madeline. You've been busy.
It's been a roller coaster ride, that's for sure. I think last time we talked was 2 years ago, roughly around this time. And I was with my husband's horse, Blue, who I was retraining from the roping arena to become my dressage horse. And everyone that follows me on Instagram knows the full story, and I won't make your audience cry today. But we lost Blue 2 years ago on July 9th. It's hard to believe that it's coming up, going to be the two-year anniversary. He colicked, but he also battled salmonella and enterobacter. We rushed him to the hospital for an emergency colic surgery. He ended up having a 360-degree colon torsion coupled with the salmonella, and that eventually turned into the enterobacter. So he was in the ICU for 45 days. And eventually, ironically, it wasn't even the colic that caused his life to be cut short. It was really the enterobacter, which is a bacteria that snaked its way in through having the catheter in for so long. His body was already so compromised with the salmonella and the surgery that this bacteria found a way in. And the only way that we could treat it was orally. And at that point, it's kind of an uphill battle. So we made the decision to put him down on July 9th, 2024. It hit us like a bat, and we're still not over it, and it still makes us emotional to talk about. But how lucky am I that I was able to have a once-in-a-lifetime horse like Blue? And so I still do my quarter horse clinics, what we talked about in the last episode, and I switched the name to the Blue Duck Memorial Dressage Clinics because that is very him. He'd want to be the center of attention. So we still do those every year. And then my husband and I founded the Blue Duck Memorial Fund, where we are able to help our local clinic for horses and humans that might be facing rare diagnosis or prolonged treatment. We can help take some of the financial burden off of them, since we felt so much love and support, not only verbally and emotionally, but financially from our friends and our followers. So we're carrying on Blue's legacy in the way that I think he would love and be proud of, and carrying the life lessons that he taught us onto our other horses now.
I'm going to cry.
I know. I'm like my hand under the table. I'm like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry.
Oh, no.
Still really emotional. I mean, Barrett and I were talking the other night. I had posted a reel of like what you all see, you know, me and my new horse. And then what I see is the courage to start again. And I texted Barrett and I was like, damn, that made me cry. And he wasn't at the house. He was out working. And he's like, I know, I saw a video this morning in my camera roll and I had a moment too. So you never really, people always ask like, well, how do you overcome it? Or how do you get over it? You never do. You just learn to live with it, I guess.
Well, like you said, you have the courage to start again. And I think that kind of segues us into a little bit of a happier, more positive topic.
Happier,
your new Barbie
yes.
horse. Can you tell us about this magical horse?
Well, it took me over a year. I wasn't just not emotionally ready. And we had a lot of things happening in our personal lives where I thought, you know, I'm going to learn how to be happy in this chapter. And that is a very weird, as we're all horse girls. So it's a very weird chapter to live through when like the number one thing that you think is what makes you you is gone. And you become a caretaker and a stall cleaner without the riding aspect. And so that was really a challenge. There were more days than not that, I was questioning, like, what am I doing with my life? But I found other outlets. I got into bar, Pilates. It's now my, like, going on 2 years, and I love it so much. And it really kept me fit for riding. So if you're on the fence about trying it, I highly recommend. And this past summer, I started to get the itch again. And we were kind of in a place where we were like, all right, let's just look and see what happens. So it was a very ironic series of events, and I don't think any of it was a coincidence. My stepdad passed away this past June after 11-year battle with Parkinson's. And before he passed, he was very adamant about how I want to help you find another horse. Like, it's, and I was the one that was like, no, like, it's not time. It's not time. And that is a, it intertwines to this story. So everything's connected. So in July, I, as a joke, posted on my Instagram a dream horse application. I had seen another influencer do this for a dating application. And I was like, well, I'm married, so I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to do something for my dream horse application. And I made a few slides on Canva. I posted it. And every single one was like, I want a Palomino. I want a mare. She has to be big bones because I'm tall. She has to have a wide barrel to take up my leg. She's got to be safe, something that I can enjoy with Barrett, do dressage, retrain, and it can't kill me on a windy day. And then, of course, I posted, I shared like some of my friends graciously did recommendations. And I said, you know, here's my, my highlights. I will literally try to go bankrupt trying to save my horse's life, so the horse will have a great home with us. And that afternoon, one of my girlfriends who lives up in North Texas sent me an ad for this Palomino. Everything that I essentially was looking for on paper. And this, I've been looking at horses for a while and nothing was just catching my eye. So this mare caught my eye. I called the seller. We had a 45-minute conversation, told her my whole sob story, you know, what I'm looking for. And she was like, I think that you need to come up and try her. So we drive the 5 hours up to North Texas that same week. I tried the mare. I walk up to her and I'm like, oh my God. Number one, I was like, this mare needs to lose at least 200 pounds. She was the biggest mare I've ever seen in my whole, I mean, I was like, girl, okay, you like the alfalfa. That was my first kind of like, I don't know. I'm like, does this horse have pushing? I don't know. Okay, so I try her. My husband rides her first. I try her, and she's pretty lazy, pretty just dead to my leg, doesn't really want to go forward, but she never done dressage. 5 years old, had no dressage background, had literally been a trail horse her entire life. So she didn't have any idea what I was asking for, but she did it. And I got back in the car, drove home, stopped at Chick-fil-A, and we're sitting there and I'm watching the videos like over and over and over again. I'm like, man, she has a really nice hind leg. Like, there's something about this mare, but I don't know. And I was very much, I'm still guarding my heart at that point. So I'm like, I don't know. I don't, it's fine. I don't think that this is the one. I can't commit. And my husband of all people was like, you need to vet this horse. You need to vet her. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're the one that would be like, no, like, let's just wait. But he was like, you need to vet this horse. I think that it's something special. So we ended up vetting her. And in that period between us trying her and us vetting her, I was already looking up her pedigree. And I had noticed that way far back, she's Peppy Sand Badger on her daddy's side. She had a horse back. Her great-great-great-grandsire was like, Paloma something. And I was like, oh my gosh. Well, Paloma, that name itself has a very like heavy namesake and meaning in my family. My stepdad's farm was La Paloma. And I grew up going, like, we spent so much
time. I just got goosebumps.
I know. I spent so much time going down to his farm. And then every single property after that was Dos Palomas for he and my mom. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh no, I'm like, here come the emotions. And I was like, dang it, this horse is supposed to be mine. So we vetted her and she vetted clean. And that last week in July, she became mine. I changed her name from Bacardi. I don't drink hard liquor and I don't like rum. So I'm like, I'm not a Bacardi girl. So I switched her barn name to Paloma and she's been with me now for eight months, going on nine. And that's the emotional story of how Miss P came into my life.
That is so beautiful. And it's just so funny how the universe works, you know, mm-hmm. And we can never see it when you're in it. But then looking back, it all worked out the way it should, you know. So tell us how Miss P's dressage training is going. Is she going to be a dressage diva?
I hope so. That's my plan. I mean, I'm still not giving up on this dream of having my upper level quarter horse. I mean, third time is the charm, right? So, like I said, she was a trail horse for most of her life. And when I had her at home, we brought her home after we bought her. I had her at home for about a month. And we ran into some snags in our communication and in our training. And it was a little bit above my pay grade wheelhouse. So I called a dear friend of mine who started my husband's young horse and put her in training with her. And since she's been in training, it has turned the corner. And we're really starting to communicate better. But if there's one horse that I've had in my career that has challenged me the most, it's definitely Paloma. She has made me take a step back and reevaluate my approach to dressage and just has, I think, pushed me to be a better version of myself as a horsewoman. So that's been a really neat journey. I think she's wicked talented. She has an incredible hind leg and she doesn't feel like a quarter horse when I'm riding her. Just with all the quarter horses that I've ridden in my life. But I think she's something special. And I just hope that I used to have such high ambitions. Like, I want to do all of these things. And now my hope every day is just that she's happy and she's healthy and that we're able to take it one day at a time. Because obviously, putting all of my eggs in one basket hasn't worked out for me in the past. So that's been a great lesson in realizing that we're on the horse's timeline and we're not on our own.
Well, I'm excited for you. This is very exciting.
Oh,
so I guess this leads to my question. Do you have any goal for her for this year? No matter how big or small, do you have one goal in 2026?
You're survive. Like,
this is what we need to accomplish.
Stay alive.
Stay alive. I like
love
that.
That.
I feel that. That's mine too.
Yeah, stay alive and stay sound would be my only two goals. No, I am riding her right now in my coach's barrel saddle because my dressage saddle does not fit her. She's a little wide and muscular, a little chunky. So my saddle does not fit her. And that's okay. It was a great run from Leah Ryder in Blue. So I've been riding in my trainer's barrel saddle. And that has kind of opened me up to Western dressage has always been on my radar. So it's kind of opened me up to trying something new. And we have a great local schooling show series here where I live. So I would love to take her out at intro just in Western dressage this year. Like I said, she's going to be six in May. So she's still a baby. I just want it to be a positive, uplifting and, you know, confidence building experience for her rather than overfacing her in a rated show environment. And this schooling show is where I took Blue. So that would be a fun kind of bridge, but it's super laid back. No stress. So I think that's a good place to start and kind of dip my toe into Western dressage and learn a little bit about it. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's it for 2026. We have a lot of life changes too happening. So I don't want to put, like I said, all my eggs in one basket. But just my main goal and aspiration, I think, is just to get to know her and have her know me. I want to take her to my quarter horse dressage clinic this year. You know, I've this will be my fourth year and I've only ridden one time in my clinic. So I am hopeful that I will actually get to ride in my own clinic this year. That's another big goal. But I would just say those two things, intro, a little Western dressage and being able to show her off in my own event that I like to do.
I love that. And I love an attainable goal. Like, we all appreciate that. You know what I mean? And I do want to pivot before we wrap a little bit, because I know you always go to Ada. And I just had to know, because I also am a little bit of a fashion girly. What were like some of your standout things you saw at Ada this year?
January is my favorite market because you're seeing everything that is coming like for the year out. August is kind of a good like refresher of what we saw, and you do see next season's collections, but January is like the biggest market. And so I always love to take my time. This trip, unfortunately, was a little cut short because of the massive ice storm that Dallas was going to be under. So we hightailed it back home. But I think two things that I noticed a lot, and I noticed this in August too, the perforation is in. Like, a lot of breathable fabrics are already on the market, but I would say like the vented is really, we're going to see that a lot going into spring and summer. And something that I'm also really intrigued we're going to be seeing more like a looser fitting type of riding shirt. There are a couple brands that are straying away from the tight fitted material and going for 100% cotton, loose fitting, button down, very airy riding shirts. And after years of, don't get me wrong, I love all my riding attire, but I am kind of curious to go back to that like loose fitting material and organic clean materials, not polyester, things like that, really like focusing on the 100% cotton for our comfort. So I'm very curious about that. And it's kind of inspired me to think outside the box because I kind of reach for the same shirts every single day.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed in seeing that shift that, okay, we're kind of going back to the loose fitting. I feel like that's kind of what we all wore growing up, you know, the
100%.
So we were out there in our baggy t-shirts. And frankly, here in Texas, it's so hot that sometimes like I can't do the really tight fitting shirts.
Yeah.
Sticky. I live in baggy clothes like constantly. So I was going to say, this is my dream that I don't have to wear something tight.
My cardigan. No, I would say like I was really impressed with Dapple Bay and their line that's coming for spring. That's where I noticed the really flowy, airy patterns and fabrics. Leah did a great job designing that. So I'm excited to see that kind of be tucked into breeches or kind of go both ways for the English and the Western.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't love that tucked into jeans.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, thank you for a little fashion scoop thrown in the show today.
Of course, a little quarter words and a little trend predicting. I love it.
I love it.
And then maybe for our last question here, you could tell us a funny story about Paloma.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm now that we are connecting more, she's definitely coming out of her shell. And she's a cheeky little thing. I mean, out of all my mares, she is the most destructive one. She's ripped two holes in her nice $70 HT bag. She's ripped her stall toy. She's ripped her fly mask. So she's a little bit of a destructive creature. But she's just playful. And in the same breath, though, I think if she were a person, she'd be Regina George.
I love it so much.
Like, she would. Like, my husband's mare, Addie, is the sweetest thing. I mean, you look at her wrong and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I will never do that again. I'm so sorry. And Paloma, you give her a look and she's like, let's go. You want to fight? Let's fight. And so we've had to like rewire her mind like, hey, you know, maybe there's another way to communicate with us than just going straight to like, you know, fight. So in that, I'm coined the fact that she reminds me a lot of Regina George. And the blonde was only suiting.
Like, I was going to say, and on Wednesday's way, we wear pink. So
exactly. So she is my Regina George horse. You think of Paloma, you think of Regina George.
I love it. I love it. Well, Madeline, we're so glad to have you back. I know, as you said, it was quite a tumultuous time, but I'm so glad you and Paloma found each other, and we can't wait to see what you guys get into in 2026 and beyond.
Well, thank you for having me, and I just am so blessed and grateful that I can be an ambassador for this breed and show people that if you have a quarter horse, you can still rock it in classical dressage and now Western dressage.
As a thank you to our listeners, we wanted to share a chance to win $50 to Katie Van Slyke's merch store. The entry link is waiting for you in the show notes. Go enter, tell a friend, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Quarter Horses podcast on Horses in the Morning. Be sure to like, subscribe, and tell your friends all about the world's favorite breed of horse.